estimation question. Okay, I didn't prepare it how I would ask this. Which variables have a very high significance in predicting? Is it even right to say predicting? I didn't really fully read the paper. Oh, but it's in the table. Okay, variables predicting intention to quit a PhD as a Belgian PhD student in, I forgot.
Oh, Belgium.
Year okay. of when you know the study French number. Okay. In 2017. Okay, I give you some of the variables.
No, don't give us any.
We just quickly guess.
Okay, so
distance to the next brewery.
But how can we guess?
Quality of chocolate.
We need to guess three and then the number of right ones wins. Or how can we?
Yeah, because it's...
Ooh, number of sunny days.
Okay, good.
So I got three.
Field of study. Age.
Because everything gets worse when you get older.
Length of studying.
I say ethnicity, age of the supervisor.
Age, yeah, okay.
And
relationship status.
Relationship status, that's a good one. Good, yeah. I say ethnicity, age of the supervisor, and relationship status.
Okay, guys, I really don't get the table. Okay. I think you can do the podcast, and within the next 30 minutes, I will just read the paper. But hello and welcome to another Desk Reject, the PhD cast edition, the Denglish version. Joining us today are...
Alexander.
Dieter.
Philip.
And I'm Sophie, and in this episode, we will be talking about quitting. Alexander, why are you still here?
Good question.
I feel like it's even though I complain a lot, it is still on average the most fun I've had in any job.
No, let's ask again. Alexander, why are you still here?
I don't know what else to do. Yeah, I don't know what else to do, I think. And given and my prior more positive comment of the other jobs I did sucked really hard, and this is the one which sucks the least on average so far.
That sounds more like you, I'll let that count. Dieter, what was your worst moment of your PhD so far?
Okay, second interview question. Worst moment...
Starting the podcast.
Too many moments, no. There's no number one, to be honest. It's just, but it's funny because I just thought about it yesterday. There's a cycle of bad moments. Oh no, it doesn't make sense. So there are, yeah, there's cycles within the year, and it's funny that bad moments, they tend to happen at the same time of the year for me. Mm-hmm. Now it's one of those.
Okay.
Yeah, that's true.
Because you like, I feel it's always really hard when you know both the teaching requirements are really high and the research requirements, right? Where you basically feel like you don't have enough time to finish anything, and that's just really frustrating. And therefore, you're more likely to quit, or you're thinking, oh, I could do something different with my life. Mm-hmm. And so that autumn is, for example, a typical time where there's a lot of teaching. At the same time, you should finish papers and. It's just frustrating if you don't move on as you expect yourself to do.
Alexander, you're nodding.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. There's always periods where the job feels somewhat more strenuous, which is autumn, and also I feel spring for me. I feel like the time period.
So not end summer.
No, exactly. End of December and January is like when teaching winds down and there's a lot of deadlines and this feeling of having to do a lot, not managing to do anything up to the standards that you'd like to, and just generally feeling a bit down because also darkness and weather.
I mean, what are the factors why you guys would think about quitting his job? Like I just mentioned a little bit, yeah, the teaching load, if that gets too high.
It's for me, it's a repeated repeated disappointments. Like, that if you put in a lot of work into something and then it doesn't lead to the outcome that you expected, or the that just is, it remains, it's getting better. I think we talked about that we build a thicker skin over time, but these initial rejections from conferences or negative feedback from supervisors tends to hit sometimes harder than other times, and especially if you feel like you put a lot of work and then you still get rejected or get not the kind of feedback you were expecting.
Not an award, you mean?
Exactly. When Philip gets an award and I don't,
yes, then
I tend to want to quit.
Yeah. It's a rigged system. Yeah.
Philip, how do you feel? It has been a long time since you've won this award by now.
Yeah, yeah, and there's nothing came out of it, right?
How's your frustration level at the moment?
I think it's fine. I'm thinking a lot of, yeah. For me, even the idea of quitting right now, so it's a hard question to answer, right? Because we are now on the final stretch of the PhD, so quitting now seems like a very stupid idea in a way. There's a lot of sunk cost effects. So this decision, is it something that I want to pursue, has been made 2 years ago. And I don't think about quitting anymore too much. It's more about, should I continue in academia afterwards? This is something, should I quit academia in a way? But not, should I quit the PhD? If I look in the past, there were situations where I thought, is it the right thing for me? But this was more in the beginning, right? Where I was trying to figure things out. Now that I kind of made the decision that I want to stay, I don't spend time on thinking whether I want to quit or not.
Maybe for listeners that are earlier in the process than we are, what is, like, until when is it, are the sunk costs not too high?
I think this highly depends on the pain that you're feeling, right? I mean, you just have to compare it, and there's a level of pain that makes it necessary and the right thing to quit 2 months before you have your defense, you know, right? So I think people should always quit if they think it's the right move. I think the system is more designed in a way that you stay longer than you should, rather than that you quit easier, that you quit
earlier than you should.
Yeah. So if you think more than 30-40% of your cognitive energy is wasted on whether you should quit or not, you should quit. I think, I don't know, maybe this, I mean, people are structured in different ways, but worrying and thinking about that just is very costly in a way.
I wonder if it's harder for people in that go into PhD to generally quit, because I feel like people that were on average good during their studies tend to go into PhD, and so they're not accustomed to quote unquote failing. So it's super hard, because if you quit here in a PhD, probably in any job, but at least for me, it feels like in a PhD, you really kind of need to be okay with the fact that you couldn't do it in a way, that you weren't able to do it. Whereas, I don't know, in other jobs, quitting always felt like, this place sucks and everybody here sucks. And, you know, I'm better. I can do something better than this. I deserve more. But at least for me, PhD quitting always felt like, I can think that, but really what I'm doing is kind of saying, I can't do this. I don't have
the capabilities, the skills, well, knowledge. But I mean, that's a hard verdict, right, on yourself then. I mean, I agree. It's different than, like, in most jobs, like you described, it would be there's a better opportunity, or this place just doesn't fit me. And but in a PhD, it's different. It's true. But I've, like, coming back to Sophie's question about the time, I would look at it like 1 year after I started, for sure. I think that's a good benchmark, depending on how long your contract is, though, right? We had a 6 years, so it makes sense to come back at it like after 2 years, 1 year for sure, 6 months as well, I would say. After 6 months, it's a little bit like, what am I doing here? And in general, is it fun, right? Or do I enjoy it? And then 1 year in, you have some idea, a better idea of your actual research, and you can evaluate if that really fits you. And then if you have a long contract like we do, I think 2 years in is probably the last exit that really makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I think there's just one caveat. I would agree with you, but I think the first 2 years is getting to know the system a little bit, and then the last 2 years is being active in the system. And I think many people stay in academia because they enjoy the system to be part of it, but really struggle to be active in it. So really publishing, producing something, and not only consuming in a way. And I think this realization that you're very fascinated by the system itself, but you don't, it's very struggling or very hard for you to be active in it. This can then lead to a very late realization that this is not for you, right? Even though you love being here, it's not a way you can strive in a way.
But I think this productive question is what you said before, that that's then decisive for your decision in like staying in academia, right? Because you can get through the PhD and you realize my output is just not
good,
not good enough, or it's not enough. And then
I mean, this would be the best case in a way that you can. But some people, I think you're right. It's very hard to love the system, to like to be here and to love to engage with it, and not being able to at least produce something that is valid as a dissertation. Yeah.
But on the other hand, I think where we need to differentiate is between quitting PhD versus quitting academia.
Yeah, true.
Because PhD itself, I think it's so outcome focused. Like we say, it's a failure if we do not. Like, we have to exit the PhD at some time, right? And failure is only the point if we do not get our PhD. But I mean, or for me at least, if I would quit now, I've learned so much that I would have not learned in any other job. Like, in any other job in the private industry, like, the focus is on my experience that I gained in that position. And it's not so outcome focused. On this one. What is it? A title? What is it?
I think it depends how you frame it. But I think it's a very good point. I think there are two dynamics interact with each other. And the one thing is what Alex said, that PhD students tend to not be quitters and are used to actually being very successful in system like that. And then it's hard for ones. And the second one is that we invest so much and we kind of frame the system like you try to do it differently now, but a lot of people frame it as, you invest a lot, but then you get something out of it at the end, right? It is a title, it is a lot of recognition, it is being respected for that, whatever. Not everyone does it, but some do, and it is framed like that often for most of the time. So having these two situations, these two dynamics interacting with each other, so not being a person that tends to quit and investing a lot that only gets a payback very late, and once you finish it, this makes it extremely hard to quit. And that's why a lot of people just don't. They tend to fade out, right? not many people say, I quit my PhD. Most people say, I would just not continue doing it here, which just means I will, let's see what happens.
I like the idea that you alluded to of these kind of periods when you can quit. And I think it would be, I can't come up with this right away on the spot, but I think there, it would do everybody in this PhD in the system, at least, and let's take our example of a 6-year contract, really good to have these evaluation periods that you just mentioned. Is like after 6 months, this would be something like, do I enjoy this kind of system that I am in, this idea of, you know, doing more work than I'm been told, but being able to justify it that I'm doing, you know, work that I enjoy doing, or that's for me, is this good, or am I like, I don't like this, is this something where I feel like I'm being abused and my time is being abused. Then after 1 year, some kind of check in where like, where did I start? Where did I get? Do I understand the system? Do I feel like I made some meaningful step forward in the way I understand how research is produced? And do I see a clear path from where I am now to the things I need to do to finish my PhD? And then going forward from that, and at every kind of stage, making an informed decision of, do I want to do this for the rest of the time going forward? And then at some point, this thing flips, as you mentioned, where it's not about, am I going to quit my PhD now? So at the, let's say last 2 years in a 6-year contract, or last year in a 3 or 4 year contract, I don't see a lot of reason to quit your PhD unless you can clearly say, I'm not going to get it. Mm. Like, I'm lacking everything, all the formalities to get it, so I won't get it, but let's take that aside. Then switching your view to, right, am I going to quit academia? Mm. Do I really understand what academia means? Or am I just seeing the, wow, it's going to be so cool once I'm, you know, my supervisor. It's going to be amazing because I'll, you know, I won't have to have so much stress.
So hard.
Yeah. But do you understand the incline, or not the incline, but the pyramid that you're trying to climb? Mm-hmm. Do you understand what it means to, you know, publish the way you have to get the job you want to? And is that a challenge that is exciting, or is that a challenge that you kind of are not excited about? And then instead of saying, right, I'm going to quit my PhD, saying I'm going to quit academia.
Mm.
But I think, like, if we would have that, like, stage gate process or whatever, I would put the threshold very low. I think we're biased. We had it in another episode already that, like, if you go to talks from professors that try to motivate you to stay in academia, those are the top-notch professors.
Mm-hmm.
You wouldn't go to someone like average.
You have the survivor bias, right?
Yeah. And then, of course, like, this puts so much pressure on you because you're like, okay, if I'm not publishing in A-plus journals during my PhD, I'm going to quit academia. There is no place for me. If I'm not getting my favorite university where I want to go, I'm going to quit academia.
But isn't that the system?
Like, you don't have to be the best to stay in academia. Like, you can all, like, I mean, it's self-selection who's going into a PhD. Like, most of us were told that we're good students, I guess. And then, of course, we want to be the best in this system. But this is not the only goal that you can set yourself. I think this puts so much pressure on me, but by reinterpreting the meaning of why I'm doing the PhD, like, I for myself, I can take a lot of pressure from me. And I think this pressure was the reason, or in those moments, these were the moments where I wanted to quit, because I put too much pressure on myself.
Mm-hmm.
I think, so yeah, that's a good point, is there's not the only way. Not the only way is the 4 top business schools in the world or 4. Europe. No, those are it.
This is something that someone says who wasn't Harvard.
There is, like, there's not just 4, there's 5.
There's also you. Yeah, there's, like, there's MIT.
If you really want to, you know, give up all self-respect, you can always go to, you know, Princeton if you want to. If you never want to talk to your family again. No, but to your point, yes. But I think, at least what I'm going to say, what I did way too little, and I'm not sure if that's something that other people feel as well, is we always talk about not comparing ourselves to others, and that it's dangerous, and that it's, no, of course you don't, of not kind of making your self-worth be contingent on what you believe others are achieving. But at the same time, I think what I do far too little is looking at where other people are and what they did. So if your goal is going to a top business school and ending up as, like, a tenured professor, they're really looking at those people that are there now and what they did and what they did during their PhD, and then thinking if that's something I want to do to get there. Similarly, if you say, yeah, you know, well, the top business schools are not the only way to go, there's a very fulfilling and maybe actually probably even better life to be had at a other university than the top schools.
You mean by what they did, what they invested, right?
What they achieved to get to where they are, as I'm saying. So you would look, I'd have to look at what? Those people that are in places that I want to go,
yeah.
and what they did during their PhD and what they did during their, let's say, postdoc,
yeah.
and what they're doing now. And is that something that I want to do going forward versus simply
you
having
publishing
this,
three papers
yeah exactly
a year.
So
yeah, I want that, yes, but
no, but also the work that is invested
that's
in that.
Okay,
you know,
that's what
I mean?
I meant with invested,
yeah,
yeah, how much they kind of let for go and didn't do in order to reach this place, right? This
yeah.
is what you mean, yeah,
yeah.
Okay,
so what does it truly mean to stay in academia, either staying in academia to reach Bocconi, Harvard, whatever, or another university that is not among the top universities, but also understanding what that means. Like, what did those
but
people
still,
do?
Still, this framing is so negative. Like, it's investing, it's like foregoing, and...
No, but you have to judge that, right? You can't be sitting around, or I can't be sitting around just imagining myself being a full professor at a university in my hometown and just saying, like, you know, I don't want to do A+ publications. I don't want to kill myself. I'm just going to end up in a university in some smaller city, you know, for the reward of that. I don't want to, or I can't, or I don't feel like it's worth my time to invest the level of effort necessary to even do the. I keep wanting to say university name, but I won't. Insert your hometown university here.
I'm from Boston.
Yeah. But that was a long, long rant now, but
yeah,
I just wanted to
interrupt you. Anyway. I mean,
does it make sense?
Yeah, it makes sense. I think it's a good point, but it's very much a late PhD perspective, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And coming back more to the PhD in general, like we just had a visiting professor, like, Philip and me, and we had this talk, and do you remember what did he say? He said something like, you know, the PhD by design does not have any rewards. Do you remember what I mean? Like, he was saying, like, there are no positive incentives by design in the PhD.
Oh, that's interesting. I don't remember this, like, part of the conversation, but I kind of know what you
mean. Yeah, we had lunch and we were going back, and I remember it distinctly, like, he was saying it. Just the way it's designed, right? It's not rewarding. It's compared to any other jobs,
mm-hmm.
like literally any other job. You don't have that in your PhD. By design, you get rejections in a sense. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, quitting in that sense, yeah,
I think
it's a different ball game.
To have some actionable help for our listeners, to maybe reflect on whether you like this process itself and are not dependent on this positive feedback or positive gains or these rewards, and to assess whether this makes sense to be in a system like that, because there will be reward. But I think it takes some time and you need to find it yourself. And if you don't have fun in the process itself, I think it can be quite a slog, and then quitting can make sense.
I don't think so I'd add that it doesn't necessarily need to be fun. Like, who
not
has
always.
Fun getting rejected? It's unrealistic that someone, or there's a very small number
true.
Of masochists out there that says, I just love being, you know, putting in the work,
yeah, but what
and
is
getting
fun
rejected.
Is to have a challenge that has and overcoming. Okay, so it is not your friends group where you discuss your ideas and everyone always thinks you're the smart one in the group, but it is a worldwide community, and there you get feedback on quite a high level. We still joke that PhD students like us do write the reviews, but still it's a higher level than my friends group, maybe at home, I don't know. And then succeeding in this setting and getting good feedback is very valuable, because you know that there's also that the chance, or you saw that bad ideas in the past were getting bad feedback. And I think seeing this progress within your own thinking, within your own ideas, within your own writing, within your own framing, I think this is fun, not the feedback itself, but the growth process. And I think okay, cycling back to what I said earlier, of course you need some time to see whether this growth actually happens within you, or this feedback or this way of working just kills you, then quit, definitely. But if you see growth within yourself and if you enjoy this growth, yeah, then I think the bad feedback is just one of the ways, is the cutting of the bonsai in a way.
I like, I also, maybe as in a similar direction, it's something that we were on a panel, not we were on a panel, but we looked at a,
we witnessed
a panel at ALM 2019, I believe. No, it can't be. No, it was.
Oh, yeah, I could remember.
2019?
Yeah, 2019.
And this, it was on some technical stuff.
Oh, yeah, I remember.
Mm-hmm. And the guy said, like, if you stay in academia from even until the very last kind of point, you need to be comfortable feeling stupid or not feeling, always feeling like you don't know enough. If that doesn't motivate you, or in your words, if that doesn't sound fun to you, then...
Jein. Okay, that's a German word. Yes and no. I would agree with you to a certain degree. This is the feedback element, but you yourself develop an expertise in the tiny field that you choose in your PhD, and where you know more than probably anyone else. So I don't know. I can pick any of your research topics. You will be one of the leading experts in the world in this niche field. And the question now is, can you engage in a conversation where you know a lot, everyone else also knows a lot, but different stuff, and now have a conversation to develop their thinking in the direction where you already are, right? To have this conversation element, because a PhD is not only building the expertise, but also having a conversation with other experts, right? So I would agree with you that in the beginning it is overwhelming, everyone knows so much, but over time you join them, but not on the same level, but on a different hill, right? So you need to yell from one hill to the other and try to build a bridge from one hill to the other.
You're stupid!
No, you're stupid! Yeah, but that's kind of what it's like, right? And if they don't acknowledge your hill and find your hill interesting, then you're doing a bad job. Maybe the hill is too far away, or it's not high enough, whatever.
Or they're the island person, right?
Yeah, but yeah, that's an island.
You'll drown soon.
Yeah, water levels are rising.
But what I'm trying to say is, if you're a bright person and you're hardworking and you've got all the skills in industry, honestly, at some point you'll get people kissing your ass because you're just the guy that knows all this stuff, and you'll have people that are like just completely enthralled by what you're doing.
That sounds amazing. Where's that?
Yeah. be a some kind of futurist or some, yeah, or even work, I don't know.
Future of work evangelist.
Be the only data analyst in an Austrian company. Like, no matter what you do, you can throw up on the keyboard in the morning because you have too much to drink, and people will be applauding your
That's
your
not
what
true.
You're doing.
That's not true.
But in
coming
the
back
difference
to reality.
Is in that that won't, on average, that won't happen in academia at any point, really. Nobody's, so put it that way, nobody should expect in academia that you'll reach a point that you'll certainly be able to reach in industry where people will just be listening to you and accepting your word and your work, and you can kind of, you know, tone it down a little bit and just relax. In academia, you need to be able to enjoy that, what I mentioned, even in your highest position, what you're valued on will be your publications. And no matter how long you've been publishing and how good you are in your field, you'll always get straight out negative feedback, or constructive negative feedback, or constructive positive feedback, but you'll always have people, you know, challenging what you're doing. And if you really want to just reach a point where you're like, now I'm the expert and everybody needs to listen to what I say.
Oh, that's a very good point, yeah.
That won't, I'm not saying it definitely won't happen, but you certainly can't expect that will happen at any point in your career.
I don't know,
academia.
Guys. Like, usually, like, if we are not recording, I'm freaking out very, very much. But every time we have a podcast, I feel like I'm so chilled.
It's kind of the idea of the podcast.
It's like you're putting so much pressure on yourself, and like
Yeah, listening to Alex, right?
Whew. Very extreme, the view that you have of academia, like being the expert. I don't even want to be that in if I wouldn't be in academia. Why? Like, it's not my goal. If I would work in a company...
You don't want to be an expert?
No, I don't need it. I just want to be, like... And
well, maybe you need to stay in academia then.
It's really
if that's
like,
if that's truly what
yeah,
you feel,
everything that the two of you describe, like the very top notch, like it's a very restricted view of what you should reach if you stay in academia. Like, well, if
I think you misunderstood my point, because that's good then. Basically, it's what I'm trying to say. If you have that, if that's not something you want. Like, if that's not something you need, some kind of crowd of people that is hailing you as the expert, then good.
Yeah.
Good that you're in academia, because that's not what you're going to get.
Yeah.
Is what I'm trying to say.
But I also don't think that you will get it in other industries.
Oh, yeah.
I want to just highlight what Alex says with different words, because I think you're misunderstanding each other. Alex says that if you want to become an expert,
yes,
don't go into a room where everyone's an expert, because you won't be an expert there for ages.
Yeah.
And this is what academia is. That's the room with all the nerds. Guys, you're all nerds. where everyone tries to be an expert, wants to be an expert, so it's very hard to be an expert there. But once you step out of this room...
But this is what you say, where everyone tries to be an expert.
Yeah, but your value in this community arises from being an expert. That's why everyone builds their own hill, right? Because you can't stand on one hill, everyone. Then only there's only a few experts.
I mean, I'm not saying
you're
wrong.
I will write this hill analogy
in
the ground.
I'm not saying that you're wrong. Just like your perspective is, again, very outcome focused, like becoming an expert, being an expert, and so on.
It's
and also what
like
you
we
do is that you're linking PhD very strongly to academia, which I like. Maybe I should question myself why I'm so naive.
What's academia to you?
Something that I will think of later.
I like it.
I'm currently in my PhD and I started it, and I don't know if I would start in a company as a junior, I don't know what, HR manager.
Java quality manager.
I wouldn't think of, like, I wouldn't start with the aim to become the HR department chief. Like the, what's it called? Not CHR? I don't know. Whatever.
CHO.
Probably.
Human.
Chief Human Officer.
He's the most human of us.
In our company full of robots, he's a chief human officer.
I love that.
Whatever. But if I would start my job, what I'm looking at is...
Sorry.
Do I enjoy some of the tasks that I do? Of course, like...
But that's not what you get paid for.
Yeah, you have a...
You get paid for being...
To produce
honestly,
stuff.
Putting it, yeah, to be the expert, and you get paid more for being more of an expert.
More expert, Z.
Yeah. Like
yeah.
you won't be able to, you know, stay in a company forever just because your bosses say, well, you know, we've got better people, they're more expert, but Sophie just enjoys her job so much. That's we can't really do that to her.
anyway, she's such a nice person. I really like her.
She's good people. She's
good enough for like average jobs.
Yeah, okay. But why do you do a PhD? Why did you study and all of
not
this?
To become the best in anything.
But we're not saying
you played badminton on a professional level,
yeah,
at least.
And I lost every single game in the Premier League. But I don't play it to become the best in badminton. Like,
but you used to play. You didn't play, but yeah, I really like. If there would be only one league different than the Premier League, this would be great. But I play in the Premier League. It's the only it's so close. The games are the closest. There's no other club I can
but
go to.
Maybe if someone wants to take just like what I thought this morning is that someone should take all of our conversations. I think this is the 40 something.
Throw them all away.
In an algorithm and find out which psychological disorder I have.
Maybe that's possible. Nah, come on,
okay,
it's bullshit.
So can I ask? So you definitely. Do you want to be better? Do you want to get better? So you say you don't want to be the best.
But I want to get better. Yes.
And how does it relate back to quitting again?
Shut up.
No, just wondering. I mean, it's interesting
conversation. What does that imply in terms of... We've not really heard from what points where you wanted to quit.
Yeah, I think maybe.
So put that into relation.
Listening to you guys. I want to quit this podcast.
No, I agree with what Dita said in the very beginning, that I think this time of the year is a very hot one because so much comes together. And I don't have a solution yet, but like, there is not a moment, but phases where I want to quit as well. And now talking to you, I think reflecting on that, it's because it's too much for me, because I feel it's too much and I can't handle it anymore. And if I'm thinking of why it is too much, a big part of it is also the pressure that I put on, and the pressure that is put on me because the whole system is built like that and everyone is putting so much pressure on themselves.
I think quitting is really good. Like, it's the best thing you can do. Just to give some advice.
Do it as long as you can.
No, your Dita supports me in my sports training, by the way. He's a great trainer. Quit, never run.
Don't even start.
Don't
running.
Start. First lesson marathons are quite long. Don't run them.
I'm just going to exaggerate a little bit, because I think it's just what we said before, right? So the average PhD, I think, is
should quit.
I mean, yeah, I agree, honestly. I think so, because
what you said before, like, average PhD is probably has been very good in the studies, is not used to quit something, right? Because they are above average in what they've done before, so they feel qualified for this job anyways. And so I think quitting is a very much an outside perspective, and that's really harmful to your own psychological safety. So that's why I just want to emphasize quitting is a very good thing to do. Even just considering that getting a good supervisor on the first try, right, is not very likely. So just quitting can really improve, I think, your chances to stay in academia. So that's my hypothesis.
What quitting?
So when you quit your first PhD position
because of whatever reason,
So I put the hypothesis forward that quitting your first PhD position will increase your chances to stay in academia. So like getting to a higher level in academia afterwards.
So if you really kind of, I think so too. I think it's the, I can see that point. It's like if you really quit and then, you know, use
academia,
that learning.
Yeah? I mean, that's the assumption, right? If you in general like academia, quitting the first one is probably a very good thing to do.
I think maybe what I wanted to say with my story is that if you have thoughts of quitting, which is totally normal for everyone, I think it's a good question to ask, why do I have these thoughts? Because they can be very different and diverse, right? And if it's because you just don't like the system and you don't like academia, quit. Quit the whole system. If it's because you don't like your institution where you're doing your PhD, because for whatever reason, look for another one. Like, really try to differentiate why you have these thoughts of quitting. And for me, it was like, because everything is too much. For me, it's like, we're at a very nice university. I have
some nice colleagues.
Some nice colleagues.
None of them is in the room.
Yeah, so the conditions that I have are very great, but I didn't get why do I really want to quit, and I was really serious about quitting like 3 or 4 times throughout the last year.
Last week.
I think what's also important is that making the decision to quit or not is something that's highly personal, right? So everyone else will probably reach a different conclusion, but it's your decision to make the quit or not, to quit or not. And no one cares.
Exactly.
I always think, what will the other think? Yeah, they actually really don't care. No. The ones in your academic system are very busy with themselves. Your family hopefully loves you, whether you have a PhD or not.
They should be happy that you're quitting.
Yeah, oh, I see him again.
Thank God this guy has quit this toxic,
why is
really
he
hard
happy?
Working.
Like, why is he happy now?
So.
And I mean, even on the job market, you will find a job without a PhD.
Okay. Is there another job market? Okay.
Not just the academic job market.
Because I thought a job market is very hard without a PhD. But okay, yeah, the one with the businesses.
Yeah.
It's hard to get a tenure track position without a PhD. Yeah.
I like that. To a degree that people don't care, honestly, I'm incredibly envious of people that are able to quit. Like, I really, like the colleague of yours that quit after a year. I'm like, man, huge props. Like, I honestly, I
and
don't have
happy.
This.
Yeah, to everyone happy. Who quit it, I talk to, they're happy.
Yeah. They're happy.
That is such an amazing thing to do.
Yeah.
It needs courage. I mean, quitting is actually, I would say, more difficult than staying in the system.
Absolutely. There's also there's a selection bias, because people that quit after a year are also usually more able to be happy in a different setting, right? Because they quit it after a year and didn't stay, right? We still stay here. Maybe we weren't happy if we would have been forced out after a year, right?
So, but I like
they don't quit on random. That's what I mean. Yeah,
I like the idea. I think for me also, takeaway would be, I think it would do people good to have the default mindset of
trying
quitting
it out.
No, I quitting? Think of quitting. Yeah, I think I think you're far, on average, the PhD students are far more biased towards, I'm going to stick it through. Mm. I'm going to make it work. I think a lot of people would profit mentally from flipping it around and kind of really honestly like taking that as their default. Why shouldn't I quit? Not why should I quit? Not, I'm think just
depending
in this place,
on your disposition, right?
Yeah, but I think that's what I'm saying. It's not, of course, not for everybody blanket. I'm not saying everybody should have, but I think on average, with the average PhD student, they're so like driven and you know, used to sticking it out and fighting it through and getting those good grades and being the best. I feel like on average, it would do a lot for a lot of people's mental health to flipping it around from why should I stick to it?
Yeah.
Yeah. More of like, why shouldn't I quit?
Yeah.
Like, why should I pursue here? If there's, you made it into a PhD, you're not an idiot. Like, it's not like you land on the street. You'll probably find another great job. Maybe even, like Dieter said, probably if you quit and then you look for another PhD position, the chances are pretty high you get a better one.
I mean, so, you're great for your next employer, like if it's university, because you already know a system a little bit. If you can argument why you did it, everybody will say, ah, okay, I understand it. Like, I'm looking for different resources. It's not really my research field, right? Everybody say, yes, okay, totally understand that. At the same time, you have an idea, right? We don't have to educate you from zero. So,
But you, I would just to add to that, I think you can switch once. If I think it's impossible to switch twice, because hiring a PhD is a high risk. And if you really buy the reason why he or she
switched. Who even switches once?
Like, yeah, it's very uncommon. Yeah, but also it's very hard.
We have two colleagues.
We also know a few. Yeah.
Okay.
But switching within a university of the size of EU is possible, but switching within one faculty at a smaller university that only has one business faculty or something like that with like six professors, I think it's impossible. Yeah. If they don't shift you around,
It really. I don't have any data on it. It's just anecdotal evidence, but I feel like. It on average, it's the right thing to do is to quit. Like Dieter said, really, on average, I think it's the right thing to quit, to switch once. I'd be surprised if it weren't so. So, yeah, I don't know.
Force quit after a year.
Yeah. I honestly think, like, if you did that on average, the average person would be better off just kind of taking away what you learned in your first year, no matter what happens. Like, you go mentally into your first PhD saying, like, I'm going to quit after a year and I'm going to take what I learned and I'm going to, you know, do it better.
Reposition.
Circling back to the very beginning of this podcast, I know we could talk on forever about quitting, but better to talk about it. Like, we can talk about it, but we can't do it, right?
No.
But I wanted to come back to what you said at the beginning, Alexander. I asked you, why are you still here? And then your first answer was unrealistic, and the second one was that you don't know what to do else.
Mm-hmm.
But if you would quit your PhD tomorrow, what would you do?
I would probably work as a ski instructor for one season. Yeah, it would be fun. Like, if in a world where if you don't take the job instantly, right? So if you, for example, you're looking for tenure track and you get it, but you have some time, like, then, because it's so different, like doing something with sports, being an instructor in some sport would be awesome, because I've done that before and it was really nice to get into academia. So it was really fun to switch to academia and yeah, this change would be, yeah, just a good recovery from the PhD.
I think I would try to become an independent data analyst for some time with a few friends. Alex, would you like to join my company?
Yeah, and please quit after 2 months.
Yeah.
You won't be a partner. You will be a junior at first.
Pay
will be shit. You need to work your way up. But that's fine. It's very rewarding. I think I would love to work as a data scientist, and I think the most fun way to do it would be in an independent setting where with a small firm, maybe hire a few people that I or to join a few people that I like, and then do it like that, and then try to do that for, I don't know, 8 months, and then see whether something comes out of it or not, and then either work as a data scientist in a company or do consulting again for some time, but in a smaller setting and maybe 30 hours.
Would you be happy?
Yeah, I think I'm more dispositioned to be happy than not. So I'm not worried.
That sounds insane.
That sounds insane. How do you get up in the morning?
Yeah.
When you're not feared of death and reality itself. I'm pretty sure I would be happy in a lot of different settings. So,
Alexander? How about you? I'm going to wait for all of you first because I honestly don't know.
We can do another podcast on all of my plans, what I would do. But I think it's a strategy of mine to just think and like dream of being somewhere else.
Your top thing right now? Like, yeah.
The most realistic one.
Yeah.
The most realistic
What's the most likely situation of where you would be if you would quit now in a year?
Oh my God, that's not, I don't know.
A company that you work for?
Maybe I would just try to open up, like, okay, but no, if I say that, you'll laugh at me again. I'm so used to you starting me down.
Yeah, Alex, that's
with
really
my
mean
idea.
Of you.
I'm looking at him. No, I don't know. Maybe start something on my own,
starting a business.
I'm not sure.
Yeah, but what kind of business?
A very small thing, like a small cafe. I know it's like everyone has this dream of a cafe.
No.
I can so imagine Philip not to have it.
but not a cafe, but more of a social place where you can bring together older people. Like, I see it with my parents, like, that they're not integrated into society as soon as they, like, retire and stuff, and try to tackle some of those problems too by creating a place, a space where you can bring together.
Oh my God. Philip is trying so hard not to say anything.
No, it's fine. People are different. Okay. I accept that some ideas are stupid.
But I honestly, I don't know. But what's interesting that both of you have this tendency to be self-employed, and that's also for me like the most interesting option to combine, like, actually what you said, like data science with sports. It's a cool angle, and to be self-employed.
A ski instructor that does data analysis.
No, like I mean, so to like my research field is actually in cycling and
okay.
Yeah, skiing. So those are my two main sports, I guess. So, and then combine it with data science, but not any kind of data science, right?
Yeah.
I just like if I out of the blue, those are two areas.
Yeah, I think for
combining
for
them.
Like smaller projects for half a year or something where they have some weird data set that they think could be interesting, and then more exploratory, what can we do with it, and setting up a system to leverage them long term. I think this could be fun.
Okay.
With some strategy angle rather than skiing or cycling. But yeah.
No, for me it's two different businesses.
Okay.
Yeah.
Alex, you'll become radio host.
Hey, why don't
and
you
responsible for the ad? Section.
Why wouldn't you do data science for a company?
Because
well,
it's
have
company.
To be it have to be a company that I want to do data science for.
Spotify.
Like I know how much it sucks to have to analyze data that you have no idea about on a qualitative level, and so it would have to be something like music.
No, just kidding.
It'd have to be like audio or music data.
What about
but
analyzing
and,
podcasts?
Yeah, and even that is like, it's fun if you can do it because you're interested in it. I just don't know how fulfilling it will be if it's like a nine to five day job. Coming in, you get your data from the streams and you need to output reports for the senior people that don't understand what the fuck a regression is. And now I don't know what to do.
For a short dose of depression, please contact Alexander. Yeah.
I don't know what to do. I don't know.
Sounds like you're afraid of the next good thing.
I don't know. I honestly don't. I haven't thought about it. I don't want to think about it.
Let's do the ad then.
Cool.
Writing ads.
So, the most important segment as usual. Today's episode is brought to you by Twitter, the best worst place on the internet.
Oh God.
The amount of tweets that have cancelled people's lives is now higher than the average tenure of a UK prime minister, which isn't a lot, but hang out on Twitter long enough and you will get your weekly dose of a tech CEO, rapper, TV star, or politician broadcasting something so profoundly disturbing it makes you wonder if they mistook the app for their Telegram Truth or group chat. So if you are tired of a stable income and a modicum of professional respect, just go on Twitter and share that thought that starts with, I'm not racist, but it may not matter now, but eventually it will end up on The Daily Show. Philip, what is the dumbest thing you've ever shared on social media and where can our listeners find it?
Because I know that I tend to change my mind from time to time and I like that about me. I don't want to make it
that.
Yeah, I know. I don't want to make it salient for everyone else. So I don't post
on a written
online.
Level.
On a written level.
Oral level.
Yeah, you can remember the crap that I said a few months ago, but usually you don't, so that's fine. So I don't post online too much.
You only have that ominous neck tattoo.
I only have this neck tattoo account that feedbacks tattoos. No, I don't.
With that being said, the first of our listeners to beat Desk Reject getting cancelled for a tweet will receive a shout out in an episode probably very soon. And that's the most important segment for this very, very uplifting episode.
I think it was uplifting. I think we did well.
I hope it was positive.
Yeah, I think so.
But my intention was,
dear listeners, tell me what the fuck I should do, is basically.
I think it's very important to you that you don't have, that you don't spend too much time thinking on what else.
Yeah.
I think it's a strategy of yours that you haven't.
That's why I'm saying, listeners, tell me what to do, not my podcast host.
Okay, but we have a guesstimation question that was technically not a guesstimation question again.
Okay, but I have answers for the technically guesstimation question.
I can't.
So the first, I'm only referring to significant variables that have a significance of a p below 0.001.
Look at the effect size. What is the biggest effect size?
So age has a 0.37.
I said age. Yeah. I made a point.
With a very high significance. And then the second one is fairness or recognition from the supervisor with a minus 0.28.
So the more
The less fairness, the more.
This is the weirdest regression table that
I ever saw. Less fairness, the more intention to quit.
Okay.
And the older
you are, the higher.
The higher.
And this is age. So I said age, I get 1 point and I win again. That's the most important information here.
Oh, can you please finish it?
It's always about women, right?
Without finishing.
But it's interesting what they were measuring, like living with a partner.
Oh, that's what I said.
Yeah, you
relationship status.
PhD is a personal choice was not significant.
Yeah.
Well, just looking at effect sizes, what were...
The highest one were age.
Minus 0.24.
Age and fairness.
And minus 0.28. So, but I don't know what the standard. I think it's a standard deviation, but I don't know for sure.
Before we completely embarrass ourselves, let's do the outro.
All right. Thanks for listening. Follow us between episodes on Instagram, Instagram and Twitter. If you like what we're up to,
Give us
a sweet review on Apple Podcasts or anywhere else. Intro, outro, and music. Intro, outro, add music by Blue Dot Sessions. Produced by Alexander Staub. Logos by Stefan Kader from Creative Prism. And recorded with the generous help of the VOTV team that has provided us with some equipment. Maybe at some point with the recording studio again.
Very nice.
We could do that.
Yeah, but I mean, we hardly even make it here in time. I don't want to know what happens if we have to walk to the LC again.
Yeah.
Okay, but yeah, that guys, was a long, goddamn long episode. I'm really sorry. This is going to be a long one.
Yeah.
And yeah, have a very uplifting
life. Bye.
Bye-bye.
I mean, it's nice that you see our mood swings. Like, two episodes ago, it was like me hyped in Seattle, and now I'm back to Vienna and very depressed.
But I think it's
Can we cut out the part where Alex spoke for ages? Quit Morris.
Quitten sind eine bittere Frucht.
Okay, wow.
Es geht heute.
Philipp quittet, glaube ich, die
Desk
Karotten.
Protect the fruit cast.
How I why I quitted my podcast project.
Why I quit carrots and not turn back again.